visionary activist show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, here back on the mothership of KPFA. My molecules are here being replenished. I'll be speaking tonight at Open Secret in San Rafael at 7 p.m. and then at the Bioneers Conference Saturday night at 8. So, yes, indeed, we gather. Each moment awaits our dedicated animation, and so we gather together real force in our council. The war on life is being waged everywhere by the Dementors of Doom, and we say, then reverence for life gathers its coherence and its momentum and its force, and that's our intention today. We say, no, the Dementors cannot have the place where life begins in the Arctic National Refuge, nor can it have New Orleans, the soul of this country, which is also, in a sense, the place where life begins. I'll be bringing in our two splendid guests here to equip us with that which we need to know, the intimacy, the art, and the beauty, and the stories, and the facts, so that we can protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And a brief weaving of context, so we say, well, Mars, very beautiful each night, is in Taurus, Venus's sign of beauty. And its image is treasure chest overflowing with brilliant jewels, the Earth herself holding to a vision of a better world, indeed. And it is right next to what's called the part of fortune, which is the point of integration for us gathering right now. And its image is the fight for justice and indigenous human rights. And we go, that is perfect, because we want to honor the Gwich'in people, the indigenous people everywhere who have been placed on the earth in their own understanding to steward and protect it, and we want to turn to them for guidance. What's rising right now, Capricorn rising, time to get to work, and its image is the power of disciplined subgroups to affect social change, absolutely. We say yes, and so on. So Mars in Venus's sign says Venus is heroic. Intimacy, beauty, art are the heroic domains of effective action. Many of us might have heard great Robert Fisk on the air this morning with Amy Goodwin. And at the very end of reporting on the Middle East and the Iraq war, she said, "What gives you hope?" And there was a long pause, and he said, "Nothing. Nothing. Nothing gives me hope." You know, and then, maybe people speaking up and so on. Well, we want to honor that, because Robert Fisk certainly has earned the right to say that, but we go, but there's magic in our alliance with animals and trickster and all kinds of things. An Inuit poet reminds us, it's called Magic Words, in the very earliest time when both people and animals lived on Earth, a person could become an animal if he wanted to, and an animal could become a human being. Sometimes they were people and sometimes animal, and there was no difference. All spoke the same language. That was the time when words were like magic. The human mind had mysterious powers. A word spoken by chance might have strange consequences. It would suddenly come alive. And what people wanted to happen could happen. All you had to do was say it. Nobody can explain this. That's the way it was. So I say, Now, years ago on this show, we had a Lakota teacher who said we were talking about wolves and coyotes and humans working together to hunt and the kind of spiritual negotiation that would go on to make sure that that took place, the kind of pragmatic mysticism. That's what we're talking about, pragmatic mysticism, spirituality and kinship devoted to greater good, in which the shaman, the trickster part of all of us would go backstage, so to speak, and emerge and go, all right, the coyotes want the front left leg and half the liver, and the wolves are cool with that, and the caribou are cool with that. Okay, back on stage. He said, if you want to destroy a culture, if you want to destroy people, destroy its intimate collaboration with animals. And we say, absolutely. These small little micro and huge poignancies, too. You know, late-breaking story on CNN said that, you know, people in Mississippi had evacuated, and they were allowed to take their dogs. Then they were shooed out of the shelter, and they were like, our dogs. And they go, no, the dogs will follow along behind. And the sheriffs shot them all the dogs. And we go, So everywhere, people's kinship with their animals is, you know, quickening in outrage, but also in force. There are no Republicans or Democrats in the South anymore. They go, what is government for? It's to protect us and our kinship. So we say alliance with the caribou. And the Gwich'in people, whose symbiotic relationship with the caribou is central to their culture, is part of our show today. As we bring in our great allies, first Shubhankar Banerjee, whose fantastic book for everyone, really. It is a book of photographs and really, really good essays. Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Seasons of Life and Land is a premium for donating today as well. So welcome, Shubhankar.
Thank you, Caroline, for having me on your program.
Absolutely. And joining is a great colleague of his also, too, Brooke Boswell. who is a recent graduate of UC Berkeley. Recent graduates can do great work. Recent graduates can do great work. And her major that she created herself at Berkeley was Comparative Conceptions of Nature. Again, nature and indigenous people, which she knew would take her through life and to do her great work. She spent time in the Arctic Village and has also been to Old Crow and Fort Yukon, to other Gwich'in villages. Welcome, Brooke.
Thank you very much.
Yes. So, and let me just also pitch. We're going to do a real show. We are in Fun Drive. Let me just mention the premiums and the number, and then we'll dive into our topic at hand. So you can call while we're doing a real show. So the fantastic book, Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, is available for a pledge of $150. And also, there's a DVD that we will be honoring this show also too, called Being Caribou. Both of these transport us intimately to this place, the Arctic Refuge, and you can see how specifically this is the most precious and specific. Okay, very important. So there's that. There's a fall equinox talk that I gave, which is pretty fantastic, according to Hoots. That's for a pledge of $60. I have one astrological reading, just a wild card thing for, you know, whatever, for $1,000. The DVD, Being Caribou, is for $60, and there we have it. And you can call, you know, 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. So that's it for you just to keep the pitching alive in your mind as well. So teammate Shubhankar, tell us how dire the circumstance is and how we can prevail.
Well, Arctic refugees right now, it is probably the most intense debate in Congress as we speak, because earlier this year in March, Senate approved a part of the budget resolution to approve oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Late this month, both House and Senate is bringing this up as part of what is called the budget reconciliation. So the timing could not have been more critical. So I'm really pleased to be on your show. And people really, really need to call their members of Congress and urge them to stop this drilling, because it is both an environmental violation. There are 5 international treaties that United States would violate if they go in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And it is a huge human rights violation. The Gwich'in people, that we'll talk more about as your program goes on, that have depended on this ecosystem, the caribou, the land, the water, the birds, for over 10,000 years. And they have been fighting this fight since 1988, when Reagan administration tried to open up this land. And right now, Congress is trying to sneak it in as part of a budget reconciliation process. And the drilling debate does not belong there. It should be part of energy. And it was defeated in energy resolution. So people have to call their members of Congress and let them know that they want the drilling to be out of the budget reconciliation process.
And also, I think it's very crucial, too, maybe you can both help us on this, that when I talk to people on planes next to me or anybody and anywhere at any point, saying, you know, it's in the budget bill because they're going to sell the leases.
Yes. So here is how it works. Is the way, because, again, I mentioned that these issues should be debated as part of energy. And when it came into the budget, the way they brought this in through a backdoor policy, because budget cannot be filibustered in Senate. And for 25 years, we have so far won this debate, and budget cannot be filibustered. So the way they are bringing it in is they are saying that the federal can raise about $2.5 billion by leasing the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The state of Alaska will require about the same amount of money, so they want to raise about $5 billion by leasing the subsurface right for oil and gas drilling. The way that numbers work is also not honest, because the basic rate of per acre lease right now is somewhere around $55 per acre. But to raise $5 billion, they have to lease it at like something like $3,000 an acre. So the numbers don't even match up, yet Congress is moving forward because the current administration top agenda, actually the number one energy agenda, is to open the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil drilling. So they have been trying many different routes to open up this land, and this is one of the strategies they are using right now as part of the budget reconciliation process. And it's interesting that they have tried all kinds of means to approach public and convince public and have been giving actually lies to public. In the current issue, I mean, the October 2nd, Chicago Tribune did a front page article, the Sunday Chicago Tribune. It was a very large article, three full pages. And it specifically talks about the Gwich'in, the Caribou, and their fight to preserve the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge as a human rights issue. But in this article, something that really struck my eyes is that a recent comment that Senator Ted Stevens, senior senator from Alaska, who is, I believe, the biggest proponent of drilling in this land, and he made a very interesting comment that I'd just like to read that one line he made. And he referred to the Katrina and the Rita, the hurricanes, recent hurricanes, and he says, I think the American people are asking, why don't we have enough energy? And they're not susceptible anymore to misrepresentations that Anwar is some kind of pristine wilderness. It's empty.
Ooh.
It's ugly.
Oh.
That's a recent comment from Senator of Alaska, his own state that we are talking about. Earlier in 2003, Secretary of Interior Gail Norton, on a congressional testimony, said about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge coastal plain, she said, it's a flat, white nothingness. A couple of years prior to that, in 2001, during a Senate hearing, senior senator from Alaska, Frank Murkowski, now the governor of Alaska, stood up on the Senate floor, held up a large, white, flat poster board. And he said, this is exactly what the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge looks like. It is a frozen wasteland of snow and ice without any life to speak of.
Oh.
What could be wrong drilling for oil in this far corner of Alaska? And so it is a difficult fight. That is what our elected politicians are telling American public. They have not been able to convince the American public yet. But this is a very critical time. I spent 2 years up there in that land in all seasons documenting wildlife, the land, and lives of the indigenous peoples. So we have to let people know that it is their right as well. This is the public land that we are speaking about, that the politicians cannot sell it to the oil companies.
Yes, I think your book, which is a premium, is a beautiful, artful, powerful repudiation of those statements, empty and ugly, it's a flat white nothingness, and you go, oh, there's a map also in the book, too, very beautiful maps that show, you know, bird migration, too, and I go, oh, everything goes through there, oh, okay, which is, again, crucial, and Brooke, you spent time with the Gwich'in, you also mentioned when we were talking kind of backstage,
mm-hmm.
that this is the direst time. There is a difference, in a sense, between Democrats and Republicans. When Republicans come into office, then the Gwich'in have to go lobby, and it's a great hardship on them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to sort of animate that for us?
Sure. Actually, just last night, I'm here in British Columbia, Canada, because I went to the University of British Columbia for a panel following a screening of Being Caribou, the DVD that you mentioned just prior. And one of the things that Canadians here are concerned about is that there's an international agreement, also known as a treaty, between the United States and Canada to protect the porcupine caribou herd, because it will affect Canadian First Nations people as well as Canadians. And that treaty has not been honored, just as the UN on Iraq was not listened to. Kyoto Protocol has not been signed by the U.S., so forth and so on. International agreements and such are not being honored by the United States, and this is one of them. And the prime ministers in France are actually speaking out publicly and saying, we will not let them do this because they have a treaty to uphold. And the professor who did this through his class, he had his students put this panel together, and he was saying it is by law, it's an international treaty, and it has to be honored, and it can be they can be held legally to upholding that treaty. So the Canadians are very concerned about why the American side of the treaty hasn't come together, because there should be an American group and a Canadian group that can come together to have meetings about the agreement. But on the American side, they say there's nobody to call. the group is without body at this point. And so that's what the Canadians are concerned about. The other thing that I was talking about with them was my recent experiences in Washington, D.C. On Wilderness Week, which there's an Arctic Refuge rally on September 20th, and then the Gwich'in are still there right now doing their drum sing dance for the Arctic Refuge vigil, which is being held beside the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian. But when I went there, a very large group of Alaskan delegates met with Ted Stevens, his staff, as well as Lisa Murkowski's staff in the Senate building. Ted Stevens was quick to leave the group and leave his staff behind to work with them, but I had the chance to talk with them because they kept saying, you know, the caribou are not going to be harmed, the caribou are not going to be harmed by oil drilling, and about 65 to 100 native Alaskan people came, mostly non-Gwich'in people who came to support the Gwich'in in their fight against drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But what I found out when I was asking the staff of Lisa Murkowski and Ted Stevens, both the Republican senators of Alaska, I asked them, do you have a, you know, caribou behaviorist or a caribou biologist on staff? Of course they wouldn't have one on staff, but do you have one that advises you? And they said no, and they asked me, or they agreed to send me their research that they rely on, and that, you know, the reason that they're saying that the caribou will not be affected. And they did send me the packet. They followed through with that, and I read through some of them, and all of the research that I have here has been done by two consulting groups, LGL, Alaska Research Associates Incorporated, and the Entrix Incorporated. Both of them are in Alaska, and it's done by a very small group of scientists. Now, this goes up against a book that was put out by the National Academy of Sciences in the U.S., the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, as well as the National Research Council. Congress, I think it was, asked for this research to be done by America's scientists. And when the book was brought back, Ted Stevens rejected it, and Lisa Murkowski basically asked, what in this is going to help me and what in this is going to hurt me? So they are not following the science that was put out by their own national academies. But instead, this administration is choosing to buy their science. And so that being said, in terms of, like Shivankar was just talking about, the arguments on the aesthetics of the Arctic Refuge, which turn out not to be true if you take one look at his book or if you do visit there, but also the science itself is being contested. So I think that this is an important thing if we're going to talk about democracy, and if we're going to talk about development versus assimilation.
It is crucial, and even on the really adorable, good-hearted DVD premium, also it's a premium, being caribou, which is there's the wonderful people, and they're in their tent in the Arctic Refuge, and they're saying, we're in the tent, and we've only peed in cups for 2 days, and we're out of water because we don't want to disturb, because they spook so easily, and yep. This is their important place. It gives them three things to give birth. It gives them the grass. It gives them freedom from predators and freedom from insects. It's the only place. So we're being very quiet, and we're hardly peeing or drinking, and, you know, and we go, there's some reverent humans. And also when you see, again, in your book and also in the DVD and also what both of you are custodians of, you know, 128,000 caribou converging from all over to do this ancient migration to this place, you go, what a civilization, what an admirable thing, and they go right to this place that is the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It's not, you know, again, we want to get people to feel and see the intimacy with it. It's like, it's this one place that's it's almost ideological. I mean, don't you sometimes wonder about their adamancy, since there is no real benefit, there is no, you know, it's, do you think it's a kind of almost ideological to just destroy, kill symbol? I mean,
it really is. I mean, I want to get back to one comment, Caroline, you brought up, which is so important and kind of makes you humble when you start looking at these connections that these animals kind of do for us. And I want to bring your listeners back to that for a moment. You talked about the birds. And the birds in the Arctic Refuge, when I spent time there, I went to photograph polar bears, I went to photograph caribou, sort of what you would call the large mammal species. But after I went there and I started seeing these tiny creatures scurrying around the tundra, living in 50 below zero, and then migrating from all over the world, I was simply blown away. I'll tell you a couple of small stories. There are 180 species of birds come from 6 continents and all 50 states of the United States. Every one of them goes to the Arctic refuge, millions of these birds, and they nest there and rear their young on the same place that we are talking about drilling. But here is there is some couple of things that was so intriguing to me, and what they do and how they do it. There is one species called yellow wagtail, and it migrates from my birth country in India, but it also goes to Borneo, to a very remote indigenous cultures that we know very little about, called the Kilabit people. When the yellow wagtail, this tiny songbird, shows up in Borneo, that's the calendar that the Kilabit people have, because they really, in historic times, they haven't had any calendars. So as soon as the yellow wagtail shows up and starts singing, it's time for them to start planting rice. They don't know where this bird is coming from. They have no idea where this bird is going to go after they leave Borneo. So when we destroy a land like that, we don't know what other things that we are destroying, because the land dies, it becomes an industrial wasteland, the wagtail dies, one more song dies, one more music goes from the planet, and one more indigenous cultures, the wisdom is lost. One more thing I'll tell you is I was simply blown away by the migration of these birds. There is a tremendous number of shorebirds, tremendous number of shorebirds that migrate to the refuge. All these sandpipers, and some of you would see them in your home states, in California or Washington or Maryland or Massachusetts, along their migration route during spring and fall. They show up in the Arctic Refuge coastal plain. They start building nests. As soon as the nest building process is successful, the males take off for their southern migration. Fair enough, the female attends the nest. As soon as the eggs hatch and the chicks are able to feed on their own, the female takes off for their southern migration. Now guess what? The chicks have to make it on their own from the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge to the southern wintering range, which is the high mountains of the Andes in Patagonia, where they would be spending their winter. Year after year, for thousands of years, they have been doing this. How they do that? These chicks who have never traveled, have no idea where to show up, shows up exactly where their parents are going to show up. How they do that, science does not yet know. And then I read this little poem that a friend of ours shared, that Arctic refuge allow us to live with such questions. And I believe we don't need to have answers for everything. But to be able to live with such questions, to me, is remarkable, that what these tiny creatures are allowing us to do. But this is a poem from poet Rainer Maria Rilke in his book Letters to a Young Poet. And he wrote this: be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers which cannot be given you, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Leave the questions now. Arctic refuge does allow us to live with these amazing ecological things, much of which we do not yet know. Brooke and I attended a presentation by a biologist from University of Washington, very world-renowned biologist, who has been studying birds in the Arctic. And he was saying, you know, we started seeing these tiny birds, because when they show up, the ground is completely covered in snow. And I would see them, that they just run from here to there to there to there in kind of a zigzag pattern. And he said, I had no idea why they are doing that, but they would do that. Anyway, he has been doing multi-year studies. And then finally he came up with a conjecture that what the birds are doing is they are figuring out where the food sources are. So when the snow drops, they know exactly where to go to without kind of having to dig through the snow, because these birds have memories that goes way beyond our memory. Like each of these tiny birds apparently can remember 65,000 spots, geographic spots. So all these little things, as we speak, 2005, we still don't know.
Yes, and that's their energy policy. They go, we know where the energy will be coming from. absolutely.
True.
So it's also...
It's just
like, how remarkable this is, that this, like, we want to open up this land, and this is not the only land, that's the thing, from an energy standpoint, this is not the only land that we can go get oil. 95% of the Alaskan Arctic coast is open for oil and gas drilling.
Mm.
We are talking about preserving the last 5% for the Caribou, for the Gwich'in, for the Inupiat people who are now opposing oil drilling in this land, and for the life that is destined to come.
Indeed, and also, the, you know, you have a great thing in your book, which is a premium. Also, Shubhankar, too, you say, in my life there are no straight lines, you know, and you delineate how you got from Calcutta to the Arctic. But I think a friend says, you know, in nature the shortest point between two spots is a curved line. These curves, this, you know, and again, what you're both bringing up too is the larger, the meta story, and then the micro, and how crucial it all is. That, I mean, this administration, the I call it the Dementors of Doom, anti-knowledge, anti-art, anti-facts, only just, you know, relentless, apparently, because your exhibit of beautiful photographs of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Shubhankar, was also, you were going to have an art opening at the Smithsonian, yeah?
That is correct.
And what happened?
Well, I mean, in 2003, right when Senate was debating this issue, same concept in 2003, they tried to sneak it into the budget bill, and Senator Barbara Boxer and Senator Lincoln Chafee introduced the bipartisan amendment to strike this language, and Senator Boxer held up the book that you're offering, Seasons of Life and Land, on the Senate floor, urged all her colleagues to look at this book and go see my upcoming exhibition at the Smithsonian. That day, we won the vote, 51-49, extremely narrow vote. We won that. But soon thereafter, Smithsonian called me saying that there was tremendous pressure to cancel my exhibition. They did not tell me where the pressure came from, whether it's external or internal. And the show was going to be canceled, but they saved it. But the show has to move from a prominent location where it was supposed to open to a downstairs basement gallery. All of the interpretive text was completely taken out, leaving behind only the titles. And the Smithsonian attorneys, general counsel himself and assistant general counsel, sent threatening letters to my publisher, Helen Cherulo, of the Mountaineers books. And we are living in a time where photographs of caribou and birds and Gwich'in culture and Inupiat culture are a threat to the administration. This is truly remarkable. And that exhibit now has traveled to 22 museums across the country, reaching over 10 million people. And it's truly remarkable what kind of a time we are living in, that Smithsonian, who is supposed to disseminate knowledge about the natural history of this country, is afraid to show the most remarkable wildlife refuge that this country, not just this country, one of the planet's greatest, has to offer.
It is amazing, and everyone out there, you can have these photographs banned by or put into the basement by the Smithsonian. It is one of our premiums. But also, Brooke, you know, guide us a little bit also into the Gwich'in culture, with whom you spent time in the Arctic Village, and also Old Crow and Fort Yukon. Just again to intimacy, so that we may be better agents for beauty in the world about collaborating with animals.
Okay.
Yeah. What comes to mind?
What I focus my research on, and you know, I will say first and foremost, always, you know, the Gwich'in people speak for themselves and for the animals and their ecology best. But I can tell you what, you know, what I focus on and what I saw in my experiences. What I focus on eco-cultural relationships, meaning that people are coming to the point now where in science, in ecology or animal behavior, animals are beginning to be accepted as having a psychology, as having a sociology, a culture even. In other words, in the case of caribou, as opposed to those little baby chicks that fly to the Andes all by themselves, the caribou actually learn from, you know, the older caribou how to get from the caribou calving grounds out until their winter migration. I think it's something like 2,500 to 3,000 miles a year, and get back again. And so this is something that's cultural. It's something that's taught when there's learning, when there's education, when it's not just pure instinct. According to Western anthropology, then that means that there is culture, and that culture was previously held as the special realm of humankind, not of animals, and that is changing now. And so my sense is that aside from food webs, and aside from domination, you know, hierarchies, dominance, and competition, that there is communication going on not just amongst animals, but amongst different species of those animals, including humans. And there is also cooperation, as well as, you know, predator-prey relationships and sometimes competition. So what I've seen when I went there, I talked to some of the elders and some of the hunters. One of them, Gideon James, for example, he's the brother of Sarah James, who many of us know about. Gideon James told me about being a teenager and going hunting with a friend where he was up on this ridge and there was a lot of wind and the caribou were down kind of in a valley area and they were moving away farther and farther away from them. And this wind was just, blustering, very, very heavy wind. And all of a sudden these, raven come down and they start bothering the caribou and flying around them and buzzing around them, around their heads until finally the caribou turn around and they start coming back. And Gideon and his friend were able to shoot some caribou to, you know, to fill their freezers. So, and Gideon told me the story not just as a memory, not just as an allegory. He was explaining to me in a very cyclical way, as they normally do, that everything in life is connected. He said when a wolf eats something, then the mice get to eat as well. All the smaller animals get to eat. And he said, the raven is a messenger for the Gwich'in. And usually, Ernest Eric as well, another Gwich'in person who was also in D.C., will talk about the raven. When they're spiraling up in the air, you can usually understand that there's either a caribou out there, there's some kind of prey out there, or something like that. But to bring it to point, the raven is seen as a messenger by the Gwich'in because they do actually help in both a communicative as well as an information transfer way. In other words, in animal behavior, the two are looked at separately. Information transfer means I might watch somebody doing something and learn what they're doing by watching them. A communication is that person telling me to do something and then a cooperation or something like that occurs. And in this case, this is a communication as well as an information transfer, but the raven will actually communicate with, a predator, in this case, human beings. They're also raven and crows have also come to be known as wolf birds because they'll do the same with wolves, they'll do the same with bears, mountain lions. And so this kind of interspecies communication is going on, and I would like to cover this more in the future and further research, but that comes down to a raven dance that the Gwich'in people do, which tells exactly the notion that when a hunter takes a kill, first of all, he must butcher it out on the land, and secondly, he must take only what he needs, and what he does not need, he should not bring back home and throw it in the dump in the village. He should leave out on the land. This keeps the land clean, it feeds the other animals, and as Gideon was telling me, it reinforces, I guess, what it is a reciprocation between messenger and hunter. Right. And so, in other words, if the caribou are detrimentally harmed, I mean, on the one hand, you're talking about toxins, which would then enter the rest of the ecosystem, that because, as we know, the herbivores that are in the largest number are the ones that are eaten by the rest of the food web. That toxicity entering the ecosystem as well as the human beings that are there, but also just dwindling in numbers. And, you know, as the caribou are affected, then this culture gets affected. And just like the birds that Shwanka was telling you about, helping these native people in Borneo with their calendar, the caribou are central for indigenous knowledge for the Gwich'in people and also central for a lot of their moral teachings. And so in a human rights sense, to harm the caribou is very much to harm intergenerational knowledge transfer, identity, culture, religion, all of this.
Yes, and I mean, it is so, that's very gorgeous.
You know,
we
have just finished a report that's coming out from the Gwich'in Steering Committee, the organization that was formed in 1988. All of the 15 Gwich'in villages came together, the chiefs and the elders, and they gave the message to the young people that go out there and tell the world in a good way that that we depend on the caribou, our culture depends on the caribou, and we want to preserve this land for the caribou, for all other wildlife that give birth there. And Sarah James, who has traveled many places, I've traveled with Sarah, and so has Brooke, if she says it in such beautiful, simple terms, like she told once, we have come a long ways, we are going to go a long ways, We are Caribou people. Caribou is our life, our songs, our dances, our spirituality is Caribou. And then there is an Ingwichin mythology. They say that Caribou has a piece of human heart and Ingwichin has a piece of Caribou's in its heart, so that each one is always knows that what the other one is doing.
What happens to the Caribou happens to the Ingwichin.
What happens to the Caribou happens to the Ingwichin. And so that relationship, I hope that we would pay respect to what the Ingwichin still has. And it was remarkable for me to see that in North America, such an indigenous culture is alive and living and breathing. What was done to the buffaloes and cultures of the Plains Indians hopefully will not be repeated here with the Caribou and the Ingwichin. So it is truly a very deep human rights struggle that we are talking about, a culture that still exists, that lives with the land, and primarily their diet still today, they say 75% to 80% of their diet comes from the Caribou, sheep, moose, fish, from the land. And these villages are remote villages. Only way you can get there is by a small plane. If there is no roads, there is no train and bus to speak of. And to take that away from them and to destroy one more indigenous culture is utterly wrong.
No, and we shall prevail, as you say, absolutely. I think what you're delineating, you know, our hearts and mutual reception, it's like the Ingwichin still know this truth, but this truth is true for all of us. It's just that we've forgotten, again, then broken treaties that, you know, the Crow tells us where the Caribou is, and we leave some for it. Oh, that's human. So in our final minutes before we must begin pitching, but guide us also, you know, first Shubhankar and anything you want to say, Brooke, too, into our strategy of now. You said that, again, it's in the budget reconciliation markup. It's about selling the leases. There is no benefit to the U.S. The leases go to whom?
Let me talk about the politics of it very quickly.
Please.
Here is the thing that why would we go drill there is, like I mentioned, 95% of the Alaskan Arctic is open for oil and gas drilling. We are talking about the last 5%. Biologists have convincingly shown in the report that Brooke mentioned earlier called Cumulative Impacts of Oil and Gas on Alaska's North Slope, put out by National Academy of Sciences, is that oil drilling does impact caribou convincingly during their calving time. You may see a bull caribou hanging around a pipeline, but you're never going to see a pregnant female caribou, a caribou with a brand new calf near a pipeline. So pipelines and industrial infrastructure, helicopters and the noise and the pollution does impact them during calving time. Unlike Prudhoe Bay, where the tundra is about 150 miles wide and the size of the herd caribou over there, the Central Arctic, is about 5 times smaller than the porcupine caribou herd that we are talking about inside the Arctic refuge that the Ingwichin depend on. And the tundra inside the refuge is about 5 times narrower. It's anywhere between 12 to 50 miles wide.
Mm.
So a narrow tundra combined with a much larger herd size, when they are displaced, this herd will severely be impacted. It's been already convincingly stated by the biologists. And then, say if we go there, we drill the place, hell out of that place, right? Best estimate of the United States Geological Survey is that the amount of oil that is underneath the tundra is anywhere between 6 months to a year's supply of oil, depending on where the price of gasoline is, right? Because we consume about 8 billion barrels a year. So it's roughly about 6 months to a year's supply of oil. And that oil, the first drop would flow. It would take 10 years for the first drop of that oil to come to the marketplace. So we are talking about getting the oil that will take 10 years, it will only supply us for about a year's supply. And the very recent study by Department of Energy just stated that the oil that will come out of the Arctic refuge will not reduce the price of gasoline at the pump, which the administration would have the American public believe, in the short term. But in the long term, in 2025, it will reduce the price of gasoline at the pump by 1 cent.
Yes.
But the question is, would we lose this place for 1 cent at the gas pump in 2025. Instead, what we urge public to do is to sacrifice 1 cent, take a simple postcard, paste a penny, send it to your members of Congress and say that you're willing to give up a cent right now and not wait until 2025, and instead you want to preserve this land.
That's good.
And last night, there was a professor there in the audience that I spoke with, and he was telling me a little bit about oil politics, but that gets too convoluted for a few minutes. But he was saying there is a statistical kind of counting or analysis that they do when representatives get some form of communication from the public. So a phone call, for example, would bring they'd be less concerned about, let's say, a mass email than a form email than they would about, let's say, a personal phone call. And apparently what gets them to pay attention most of all is a handwritten letter.
Okay.
So a handwritten letter actually gets more attention. In other words, they say that if somebody does a handwritten letter, then there are a certain number of other people who have a similar opinion, or that person has a certain number of friends or has a certain willingness to go forward more so than someone who just clicks on a button.
That's good. I am gonna have to go pitch as a responsible teammate
yes.
for the thing. But also, but it's clear that you guys can hang in and go, yes, give money if you want, and we can keep interjecting facts because it's very clear. It's impossible to say goodbye to you both. You are both so eloquent and useful. This is a great show. But so hang in if you want. Wait, are you willing to hang in here?
Sure.
Okay, that's great. Because let me just I'll give out the numbers in 2 seconds and try and be a responsible human being as well as larger. But that also your idea, Shubhankar, too, is if we can just get the budget reconciliation bill, you know, passed October 23rd, passed to the end of the year, then it dies?
Yes. So if we pass over the hump right now that it is not included in the reconciliation, mm-hmm. then that process dies for now. And the next year, they'll have to bring it up all over again. That's how the budget process works.
Okay,
that's the only process that is filibuster-proof. But the thing is that next year is the election year, congressional election. So most likely such a contentious issue will not be brought up next year.
Yes.
But the point is that we have to win right now. So go to arcticrefugeaction.org or 888-8WILD-AK. And you will find all the information.
We will do that. You guys hang with us. Meanwhile, teammates, we've squidged into pledge time, so we want you to be particularly vociferous and generous and active by calling 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. This is such an important and beautiful and crucial. This is about, you know, the life, the future of life on this planet. We have wonderful, pertinent premiums for everyone as well. Really, we'll just think of it as a gift for your donating that you want to do anyway, too. We have this Seasons of Life and Land Arctic Refuge photograph book done by our great ally, Shubhankar Banerjee. That's for a pledge of $150. We have the really useful and adorable DVD, Being Caribou, for $60 donation. We have the Fall Equinox Talk by me, Cavorting Cahoots with Creation, $60. And then there's a wild card, one astrological reading that I'm donating for $1,000. You know, what the hell, just to get one person really active and ready and fully unleashed on the world. So again, do call us at 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. There is life on the line. We really need this. We need to be able to bring the voices of there's nobody like Shubhankar Banerjee or Brooke Boswell, but allies like them, and they in turn are speaking for other allies as well. This is such a council and meeting place. There's such an ardent team of all of you out there with whom we are intimate and devoted, and really, we know, you know, since Katrina, I mean, the war on life is huge. We're really in it right now. Preserve and protect and save as much life as possible. These are huge times. So, welcome, Vinny.
Yes, I am glad to be here with you. And, you know, one of the things that I have known from the people who've listened to your program is that they understand the connectedness of nature, of man, and what is happening. There is nothing that is happening, separately from anything else. There is a reason for the hurricanes the way they've been going. There is a reason why the Atlantic North, New Jersey, New York is flooding right now. It's all connected, and, you know, please give us a call at 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. We have two tremendous premiums available to you. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Season of Life and Land, as well as Being Caribou. And now I'm mentioning these because these have actually documented what we have and what, and it's there before we lose them. You know,
and we're not going to. We're not going to. We're not going to lose them. We will prevail. Say it again.
Prevail.
Say it, Shubhankar. Say we will prevail.
We will prevail.
Yeah.
Ah. So we need you. 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. We need the listeners here to KPFA to support what the information that it's getting out there. You're not getting it anywhere else. And I'm sure that these premiums are not really readily available at your local bookstore or your local video store, and this is a way of getting a documentation of what is happening now and to be able to share it with friends and family. And you know, thank goodness Carolyn Casey is right here in our studios to help promote things like this, because where are other opportunities where you can communicate with such a large group of listeners? 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. I just want to point this out. You can get the book, the CD of Caroline Casey's Full Equinox Talk, and the DVD all combined for a pledge of $225.
That's nothing.
$225. So, you know, you already have your holiday shopping done. Your Equinox.
That's right.
You know, and you're actually doing something really good for not only for your community and for yourself and your family, but you're also doing something good for the station. 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732.
And I would like to say, I know a lot of people in Pitching going, this is the only place you'll hear this, and it's the only, and I'd like to say, that's actually not true. There are a lot of teammates out there, you know, doing just great, you know, real work, you know, great Brooke Boswell, great Shubhankar Banerjee, you know, and you in turn going at conferences, and there are so many good-hearted people doing good work. This is one place where we combine it, where we give voice to that. And the best thing that people say in this ardent, ardent community that listens to this show is, you know, you're putting into words what I'm thinking, or when you said it, I realized I knew it. You know, we are literalizing again our sense of community and kinship, that there are more sane, reverent, good-hearted people doing good work in the world than there are dementors of doom, but we've abdicated our woof. And again, you know, Brooke and Shubhankar are helping us get our woof back, right?
Mm-hmm, very much.
Yes, woof, woof, woof. So you know, your woof can be translated into a phone call. Woof, woof. You know, and when you call up, you just go, woof, I want to give money, woof, woof, on behalf of the wolf people and the caribou people and the Gwich'in, who are, you know, I love the, you can correct me, Brooke, too, but I think Sarah James told me that Shalak Nai means for all our relations.
Yes, all my relations, yes.
And it sounds so Arabic.
I mean,
and it's easy.
I guess you could say yes.
It's easier to say than Omantakriyasin, which but Shalak Nai for all our relations. So we urge you to pledge what you can. Anything is welcome. Lots of money is welcome. All of it is equally welcome. It is your way of affirming with manifest incarnate action Shalak Nai for all our relations by calling 1-800-439-5732. Or 510-848-5732. There's a lot of people listening online, a lot of people listening to the archives. You can pledge online or call in. We have listeners in Sweden, in South Africa. Welcome, hello, guys out there. A lot in the Midwest, a lot in the South. There are little enclaves. There are people in Santa Cruz who drive to the top of the hill so they can get the reception. Hello, hello, you can call from your cell phone. You know, there's crows that cannot call on the phone, so call for them. That's what we say. And any other animals you want to invoke, Shubhankar and Brooke, who are out there, we're calling for them.
Well, how about the polar bears?
Polar bears.
Nanook.
Nanook.
No, and the yellow. Wait,
wagtail.
Wagtail.
The yellow wagtail and the people
yes.
in Borneo. You know,
that's
call
right.
for them. God, and their calendar. Ah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. Speaking about the interconnectedness and what's been happening, I just want to say real quickly that this Saturday we are going to be having marathon, but the funds that we are raising on Saturday are going to Katrina Relief.
And so,
now is an excellent time to support KPFA so that we can help and support other people. And we had to get a special clearance from the FCC to raise money as a nonprofit for another, or actually two other nonprofits. It's the Vanguard Foundation, and which is helping the displaced, especially people of color, to rebuild their neighborhood.
Yes.
And the Tipitina Foundation, which assists musicians in New Orleans. So right now, you can support the station to enable us to support other people who need it. The interconnectedness, that's what we're talking about. 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. Support KPFA, support Caroline Casey, support the interconnectedness that puts us all together. And you can be Buddhist, you can be agnostic, you can be whatever. We're all connected. We're all on the same planet, breathing the same air, and leading towards the same fate. And unless we get together and work together and make sure that we strive to improve the quality of life of everyone and everything, then we are going to be at a loss.
Absolutely.
And that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely. And I like to say, and we'll be saying tonight at Open Secret and Bioneers and everywhere too, but the soul of this country, if it had an address, a physical, well, I think it would have two addresses. If the soul of this country had an address, one would be New Orleans, and I think the natural soul would be in the Arctic National Refuge as well. And we say the fate of New Orleans, the fate of the Arctic Refuge, is our collective fate. Does that make sense to you, Brooke and Shubhankar?
Very much.
Very much so. And like a friend of ours, Carol Hoover, said,
yes,
it's your call.
It's your call.
It is our call. And one micro gesture that, again, that you can intend that it may benefit Shalak Nye, all our relations, is by calling 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. You know, sometimes it is hard to ask for money, but we're not doing it for ourselves. Again, you know, that most of the programmers, myself included, we do this for free. There's enormous wealth in doing this show, but there is no money. The money goes to the station, and that is the form of fuel. That is the form of energy that it currently requires. You know, good wishes are good, but in order, it needs the money as the current fuel, which we will, by the power of Pacifica Alchemy, turn into great good. We will launder this money and cleanse it so that it is devoted to the greater good of community. So 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. And just to honor our guests as well, Shubhankar's really fabulous book, which is so useful, again, to have, to gaze, to feel intimate and transported by looking at these photographs, to show to anyone who, like the Dementors of Doom, say, oh, it's nothing, there's no light there. Oh, you go. So you can have that incredibly useful tool and access for intimacy. You can put it on your altar. You can talk to it. You know, for a pledge of $150 is this beautiful, strong book. The DVD, Being Caribou, very humble and wonderful. These two people who just set forth, who are dedicated, and you get to see the incredible convergence, you know, of these people that we know as animals. 128,000 caribou convening, and you can see the reverence of these people going, oh, we're staying in our tent so we don't disturb the caribou. You know, and think of the horror that is being threatened. But these are people who didn't want to spook the, you know, incredibly spookable, you know, pregnant caribou, you know, by stepping out of their tent. Think of trucks and roads, and we go, no. So do call
510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. We only have a few more minutes before we go to cover to cover. And, oh, Lord.
Oh, look, we have a match. Okay. We have a match. I love this. This is collaborating. We're like crows and caribou. Okay, there's a match of $500. Anonymous donor in Napa. Mwah, mwah, mwah. So let's come up with that. Absolutely. Bless anonymous donor in Napa. It's probably an animal being. It's probably a crow who said, crow, you can figure it out with a touchdown phone. Here, okay.
So I'll take a bear.
Anonymous animal people in Napa are saying a $500 match.
That's
so
right.
We got to do this in 3 minutes. Let's go, team. Come on. If the caribou and the gwich'in and the ravens can collaborate, we can do this. We can revive our little tiny muscles of collaboration by calling 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. We have great...
And also, I want to say that if you're listening online, because you mentioned people who are listening out of the country, out of the city, you can also pledge online by going to www.kpfa.org.
Yay! Even if you're in... Syria. We have some listeners in Syria.
All right, we have two callers on the line. We need more.
Ah, no, team, please. All right. We have a match of $500. We've got 3 minutes to make it. We want to thank Mary Margaret Scribner. We want to thank Shirley Smith. Bless you. Diane Barker, there's an animal. Chris Stanton, thank you. Caroline Strauss, yay. Verita, Linda, beautiful human, mwah, we love you. Betsy Ann Gallagher, Mary Roth, let's go. Susan Herring, that's a lot of women. Boys, come on. Emily Hilger, Steve Muldoon,
all
yay,
right.
Boys, whoa. Come on. Mary McCarthy, boys not doing very well. Beth Wagenheim, you great, cute thing, mwah. E. Nelson, could be a boy, but I think it's a girl. Gregory Marshall, yay, Gregory, there's a boy. Meg Lice, boys, you're not doing it. Come on, even that thing up. We are equal here by calling 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. Come on, I get mobbed everywhere going, oh, we love your show. Do it now.
Now's the time to really, I mean, you're not just showing your love, but you're showing your support for what she does. I think we're very lucky to have Caroline come here and to really volunteer her time on air.
10 years.
So we just need you to call 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. I'm unsure how many people we have in the phone room, but if you get a busy signal, please call back 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732.
Is that the lines?
These are the lines right here.
Oh, there's one open.
Yeah, there.
Oh, there's a bunch of them open.
One, two, three. Well, we ignore
this. Oh, okay, we ignore this. There's three open. There are three people who love animals and wildlife out there who could be calling right now. Again, you know, the truth of what we worship is what we spend our time on and what we do. It's not what we say. So this is a time to say, I really do mean this, and I can give this to, because I support this kind of work, because it's our work. It's really devoted to, you know, it's shalaknai. Actually, Brooke, can you say that properly for us?
Shalaknai. Oh. Yeah, you have it pretty correctly. Shalaknai.
Shalaknai.
Yeah, and I just want to thank Brooke and Shabanka before we get out, because we just right up to time. You know, Richard, who is very wolf himself. Richard Walensky is coming up next, but we still need you to call 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732.
So thank you very much, Brooke, and Brooke Boswell for your great work, and Shubhankar Banerjee for your great work. You are tremendous, irresistibly eloquent voices for life and for our team, and I think you've just done a beautiful show.
Thank you very much, Carolyn, for having us on the show, and thank you for your big heart and your concern for the indigenous people and for animals across the world.
Absolutely. So that's great. We have one more minute, I think. We have one more minute to make that match. We haven't heard. Oh, we're going out. Oh, team. Okay, goodbye, Shubhankar and Banerjee. Let us collaborate in future. Let us all be in perpetual cahoots. I'm Caroline Casey. Thank you very much, Erica Bridgman, who puts up with all my delinquencies. Mwah, we love you. Thank you, Vinny, for pitching, and I hope we made our match.
I hope so, too. I have a feeling we did.
We did!
Yay! Oh, yeah, yay!
Tito La Rosa, internationally acclaimed Peruvian sound healer, will return to the United States this September 21st through October 15th for a series of concerts and flower and sound healing ceremonies to benefit Aini Projects, a nonprofit organization working with Quechua people in the Andes. For more information about this year's tour by Tito La Rosa, or to learn more about Aini Projects,